Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into another fantastic edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Happy Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. Boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to get to throughout this next hour here on WKAR, AM 870, 94.5 FM. How about the Detroit Lions just bringing it against the New York Giants last night on a primetime stage, Monday Night Football, the football world watching what the Honolulu Blue did last night. What a game for the Lions. And the question I want to pose to all of you out there is, are the Lions for real? Are you buying the 2-0 record? I mean, they beat a really impressive Arizona Cardinals team that is expected to have a pretty good year. They just beat the New York Giants now, a Giants team that, again, when you look at game one against the Dallas Cowboys, and considering that my Cowboys did fall like they did against the Denver Broncos on Sunday, a Giants team that just isn't good. However, I mean, this is a squad that has some pieces that are pretty admirable. Were you impressed by that Lions victory last night? And are you buying that the Detroit Lions can really make a splash as the year continues? They, of course, will now welcome the Atlanta Falcons to Ford Field this Sunday at 1 p.m. Short week, short turnaround for the Lions. What do you think? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We will also have coverage from this morning's Michigan State football press conference as Mark D'Antonio addressed the media as the Spartans prepare to welcome the Notre Dame Fighting Irish to Spartan Stadium under the lights. It's a stripe the stadium for the fans out there, so certain sections will wear green while others will wear white. It will be a nationally televised game on Fox. What do you think about the Spartans as well heading into this matchup? You get to hear from Coach D'Antonio as he will elaborate on what this rivalry means and is meant to him. Throughout his career, he's 4-4 against Notre Dame throughout his tenure as the head coach of the Michigan State football team. He's 2-1 against the Fighting Irish at home. We'll dive into that game. And again, you get to hear what Coach D'Antonio had to say concerning the rivalry. And also, when you evaluate the fact that the next time that Michigan State and Notre Dame are scheduled to play football against each other is not until 2026. I will be knocking on the door of 40 years old the next time that the Fighting Irish and Spartans get it on, which is a bit odd, right? That's a bit odd to think about that, especially seeing as though these two teams have battled in some pretty historic games, all right? So we'll get to Michigan State and Notre Dame in just a moment. And on the back end of the show, we'll talk some NBA drama. It's been a drama-filled offseason that continues as Kyrie Irving went on the air with ESPN's First Take and finally addressed why he wants to leave, or wanted to leave, I should say now, right? The Cleveland Cavaliers to play for the Boston Celtics. And a particular soundbite that has everyone talking when he was asked about whether or not he let LeBron James know that he wanted out before deciding that he wanted out. We'll get to that in just a moment. And also, a fake Twitter account and Kevin Durant Yeah, we'll explain that and so much more. 517-355-WKAR. Again, you can join us via social media, as you always can, at facebook.com/currentsports, where we currently have our live stream up and running. And also, you can join us via Twitter, at Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR_sports. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. And we begin with, of course, the Detroit Lions, who earned a 24-10 dub over the New York Football Giants on Monday Night Football at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. Matthew Stafford threw for 122 yards and two touchdowns on 15 of 21 passing. According to Pro Football Talk's Michael David Smith, the total is the second fewest passing yards in a game in Stafford's career. But nonetheless, a win is a win. Just 122 for Stafford. Eli Manning finished 22 of 32 through the air for 239 yards, one touchdown, and an interception. The Lions will now get ready to host the Atlanta Falcons at home again on Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m. game at Ford Field there. We will have more on the Detroit Lions in just a moment. Are the Lions for real? Are you buying the 2-0 start with wins over the Arizona Cardinals and now the New York Giants? We'll get to that conversation in just a moment. All right, Marcus Semien scored three times, twice on Jed Lowry RBIs, and Matt Olson added his fourth homer in as many games, sending the Oakland Athletics to an 8-3 win over the Detroit Tigers at Comerica Park. Nicholas Castellanos had three hits, extending his hitting streak to a career-high 15 games. Tigers reliever Jeff Farrell left the game in the eighth inning after a Ryan Healy line drive hit him in the head. Saw the video of that, a very scary moment. Anytime you see something like that happen, the ball seemingly hit Farrell off the back of his skull before bouncing all the way to first base. Scary stuff there. All right, the series continues today at 7:10 p.m. The Detroit Red Wings. Yes, Hockey Town is back as the Wings will play the Boston Bruins in exhibition play at 7 p.m. tonight at TD Garden in Boston. It's the first of eight preseason games and the first of three straight on the road in three straight days for the Winged Will. Hockey already back. How about that? All right. Michigan State's Big Ten opener on September 30th. Versus Iowa in Spartan Stadium for MSU football will begin at 4 p.m. The conference office announced that news. The game will be broadcast on Fox. So you have back-to-back games that will be broadcast on Fox, seeing as though this weekend's game against Notre Dame will also be televised on that network. All right, kickoff time for MSU's game at Michigan on October 7th could be released next Monday. Now, Kevin Pauga, who's MSU's assistant athletic director for administration, announced that on last week on WVFN AM 730 in Lansing that TV networks have a 12-day window to make the decision about what time to set the game times. Now, wouldn't that be something, though, if Michigan State and Michigan go at it under the lights for a night game? It's been rumored. I remember Mark Hollis, Michigan State athletic director, Mark Hollis weighed in about 2 or 3 years back and said that right during that moment, they wouldn't consider a night game. It could get out of control. Fans and a rivalry like that, an in-state rivalry like that, could get out of control a bit. But hey, Mark Hollis isn't in charge, right? So we'll see what happens. That'll be something, though, if that game is a night game. All right, Michigan State basketball fans won't have to choose between the Spartans or the Detroit Lions this December after all. ESPN has adjusted the tip-off times for a December 16th college basketball doubleheader at Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. That's according to an updated schedule released by Oakland to avoid the game being played at the same time as a nearby NFL game. If you remember, Mark Hollis sounded off on that and did not like how the Spartans will be playing essentially the same time as the Detroit Lions. Well, Michigan State will now play Oakland at 2:30 p.m. that day, following a game between Michigan and Detroit Mercy in the first college basketball games to be held in the new downtown Detroit arena. Now, Michigan State and Oakland were originally scheduled to tip off at 4 p.m. that day, 30 minutes before the start of a home Lions game against the Chicago Bears, just a few blocks away at Ford Field. I like that change a lot. All right, Michigan State University lost a public records lawsuit against ESPN for the second time in 2 years. The most recent lawsuit stems from a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request, by, that ESPN submitted in February for police records containing allegations of sexual assault over several months, as well as records of arrest. Quote, as is not entirely uncommon under FOIA, the public body denied the request. That's a quote coming from Michigan Court of Claims Judge Cynthia Stevens, who wrote in a ruling last month. She went on to say, quote, that denial sparked a sequence of events that is different from those that normally occur in conjunction with a FOIA request, end quote. All right, Adidas has passed the Jordan brand. How about that? As the second most popular sneaker in the United States of America. Market tracking company NPD Group announced that yesterday. This is coming from NPD sports industry analyst Matt Powell, who went on to say, quote, I've never seen a brand in the sneaker industry grow this fast, end quote. Now, it has much more to do than just Kanye West signing on with Adidas, right? Because Kanye did sign with Adidas, but those shoes are ridiculously expensive. And a lot of, you know, it's so funny, Isaac, because a lot of people believe that, oh, it's got to be Kanye West, right? His sneaks are hot and they're selling, but they're not selling to the average blue-collar American.
Which not at all.
Makes up most of this country, right? So it's got more to do. Are you surprised by this story, though? I'm curious.
I'm shocked because I thought Adidas was dead, buried, and gone, to steal a quote from Nick Saban, when they signed Derrick Rose to 10 years, $275 million. Of course, Derrick Rose fell off the face of the earth after his two injuries, and I thought Adidas didn't stand a chance against Nike or Jordan. Obviously, I was wrong. James Harden proving to be a good signing for them, amongst others. And like you said, it's not just Kanye.
No, not just Kanye. It's got much more to do than Kanye. I actually saw even Lonzo Ball sporting the Adidas sneakers during his Summer League campaign. So, yeah, and you look at the numbers from January through August of this year, Adidas had 11.3% of the U.S. market share by dollars. That was up from the 6.6% the brand had over the same period last year. And a really troubling story here. Five students in the town of Creston in Iowa staged a cross burning that was captured on social media earlier this month. Now, with all of them wearing white hoods in the video as well. One held what appeared to be a Confederate flag. Another held what appeared to be an assault rifle. The local newspaper, the Creston News Advisor, Advertiser, reported that the students in the photo were members of the high school football team. Now, the athletic director at the school disciplined the students, according to the Register. But that's where this really becomes tricky, because the students are minors. The school did not reveal what disciplinary action was taken. They had been removed from the football team. But as unsettling as the act was, it's not clear that it's legally appropriate for the school to hand out such a punishment. What a world we are living in 2017. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open, 517-355-WKAR. We are asking the question, are the Lions for real? Are you buying the 2-0 start that the Lions are currently selling to you all at this moment? Wins over the Cardinals and the Giants. What were your thoughts on last night's Monday night football game? 517-355-WKAR is the number to call. Again, go to facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet us at WKAR_sports or at Al Martin WKAR.
Beckham Jr. dropped 8 in the regular season last year. That was 6th most in the league. Booming punt by Wing. But Jamal Agnew, a nice return. It goes by the punter Wing, and he is off to the races. Jamal Agnew, the rookie out of the University of San Diego, makes it a 2-score game.
That's another Bob Quinn draft choice. This good for a while. It's a great catch. Unbelievable open field running.
He can run. He ran 88 yards after a 60-yard punt. That's Zach Diossi, the long snapper, among those who could not get Agnew on the ground. No chance for Wing. He's done very little on offense in the second half until now. Here's Amir Abdullah off to the races, and he's spun down by Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, who then clutches his knee. Last time the Giants went 8 games in a row without reaching 20 points back in 1978 and 79, when they went 17 games in a row.
Are you buying what the Lions are selling? Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. You can weigh in multiple ways. Again, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's dive right into it. The Detroit Lions with an impressive win. Well, depending on who you talk to, if it was an impressive win or not. A 24-10 victory over the New York Giants on Monday night in MetLife Stadium, primetime television, a platform in which the Lions have been hit or miss. Let's be real here. When the Lions normally play on ESPN, on national TV, under the lights, it normally does not go well. And there were a few things very interesting about this matchup. And I'm just going to come out and say it right now. I'm not buying it right now. Okay, let's pump the brakes, because the New York Giants are just not a great football team, okay? They're just not. Eli Manning looked absolutely horrible last night, and a lot of that has to do with that absolutely horrid offensive line. Horrible offensive line for Eli Manning to have to deal with in the pocket. Now, I have never been a big Eli Manning fan. I believe that Eli Manning needs great pieces around him in order to be successful. But you look at, you know, the defense of the Detroit Lions, and it was impressive, I must say. But again, it's a defense that was going against an absolutely horrid offense. Right now, the Detroit Lions defense ranks number 7 in the league, allowing 289 yards per game. Contained Arizona running back David Johnson, kept Giants receiver Odell Beckham Jr. in check. Odell making his season debut after getting injured in the preseason ankle injury. The defense allowing only 53.5 yards per game rushing. It's been a surprise, I must say. It's been a pleasant surprise. And right now, they've shown the most consistency when you look at this team from top to bottom. How about the pass rush? They have right now 6 sacks in 2 games. And watching that game last night, Ereck Flowers just got picked on that entire game. Ereck Flowers is not that great. Ziggy Ansah had a field day when it came to Ereck Flowers. I mean, his footwork isn't great. He gets off the line very slow. I don't know how Ereck Flowers still has a job right now, but he got just absolutely embarrassed, and Ziggy Ansah just feasted on him that entire game. So, you know, I'm conflicted when watching this Detroit Lions team, because even though the Cardinals are a solid team, I mean, playing the New York Giants, and the Giants lost to the Dallas Cowboys, and the Cowboys looked pretty underwhelming against the Denver Broncos on Sunday. You know, Jarrett Davis, I saw that Jarrett Davis, this could be a concern because Jarrett Davis, I'm big on Jarrett Davis. I absolutely love him. He's a born leader. He's a heck of a football player. He's already getting it in just, two games of the season. But he went down with an injury, a head injury, that was pretty scary. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr., I don't know how he was not flagged on that play. A clear block in the back that essentially pushed Davis into the offensive player. He hits his head on the opposition's thigh, and it looked like a head and neck injury, and he immediately came off the field after sitting on the field for about a minute or two, and they took him under the tent on the sideline. So that could be a concern. But, you know, Jarrett Davis was great, I thought, as middle linebacker for this team. How about, you know, Tahir Whitehead? He has fit well on the outside. The secondary right now has three interceptions. They've looked great. Matthew Stafford actually said after the game the defense, quote, was nails, end quote, against the New York Giants. But this defense is going to be tested against the Super Bowl running up Atlanta Falcons this Sunday. This is when this is going to really tell. This weekend, I pump the brakes right now because this weekend, when you play a team like the Atlanta Falcons, who made it look easy peasy, lemon squeezy against the Green Bay Packers, that's when we are really going to see what this Detroit Lions team is made of. I get it, and I saw a lot of posts on social media. A lot of people I follow who are Detroit Lions fans, a lot of the homies I grew up with in the D who have lived and died with this team for a long time, they're feeling good. And you should feel good as a Detroit Lions fan. I mean, to start off the year 2-0, to lead the NFC North right now in the standings, take a picture of those standings right now, because who knows how long it's going to last. But all I'm saying is, again, as I stated last week when they beat the Cardinals, it's only week two. It was only week one then. But let's pump the brakes here. And Darius Slay, I love him. Darius Slay has been the guy for the Lions defense dating back to last season. Slay went on the record to say after the game, quote, "Oh yeah, it's for real. We for real. We ain't no fake. We are for real," end quote. That's a direct quote from Darius Slay after last night's game. So the Lions will have the opportunity to prove whether or not they are for real going against defending, you know, MVP and Matt Ryan at home against the Falcons. Because, again, it's the New York Giants, folks. Now, granted, you look at the history between these two clubs, recent history, I should say. The Giants have won, coming into that game, had won four of their last five games against Detroit. And especially at home, you know, last season, the Giants finished 7-1 at home last season. You know, that was their best record in the history of MetLife Stadium, and their best home record since they were 7-1 in Giants Stadium dating back to 2008. But you know what was particularly interesting about this Lions win? Finally, Detroit Lions fans could sit back on that couch and just relax from start to finish. You didn't have to worry in the fourth quarter, staring at a deficit, relying on Matthew Stafford to have to put together some magic and have another comeback win. You know, they had an NFL record 8 fourth quarter comeback wins last season, in which Matthew Stafford had to put the team on his back. They start the year off against the Arizona Cardinals, staring at a deficit in the fourth quarter, having to rely on Matthew Stafford to have to put together some magic. That didn't happen. That's what was different in last night's game. Primetime television, the Lions pretty much dominating from start to finish. That was very impressive, and I don't know how telling it's going to be as the season rolls along, but I must say it was very impressive to see that happen. And it wasn't a close game. I mean, you know, 13 of the Lions' last 18 games coming into last night had been decided by a touchdown or less. You could just chill as a Lions fan because there was no hope that the Giants were going to come back in that game. But let's be real here. I mean, this is the New York Giants team that does not have an offensive line. A New York Giants team in which Odell Beckham Jr. starts the year hurt, didn't look completely 100% healthy yesterday. Brandon Marshall just had some blatant drops where you're like, what in the world is going on there, right? A New York Giants team that didn't have any run game. This is going to be a Giants team that will struggle as the year rolls along. And, you know, moving forward now, again, you play the Atlanta Falcons. An Atlanta Falcons team that a lot of people believe will make a deep playoff run this upcoming year. I just want to pump the brakes on the conversation. I mean, a lot of people may be buying what they're selling right now, but again, I'm just saying that this is the Detroit Lions. I mean, how many times? I mean, just date back to last year. I mean, they had a great start last year. But as the season went along, it was up and down, up and up and down. And, you know, you had to rely on the fourth quarter of Matthew Stafford's brilliance to get wins. So, I don't know. There's a lot of takeaways to have from it. I want to hear from you guys, though. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Right now, let's go to line one. We've got our dear caller and friend, my man Austin. Austin actually dropped. We got Dave from Wyoming, actually. Dave from Wyoming, who's also a dear friend of the show, on line one, who wants to chime in about the Detroit Lions. Dave, how you doing, my man?
Doing well. I don't know how you feel. I think once you get to football at any level, I really don't think you're going to know what's going on until game four or five, mm-hmm. after game four or five. Because, you know, one, Manning just looked old last night. Don't know what, you know, how you see it. But, you know, he's one of those guys now eating a lot of cap space, and I wonder if he's going to, you know, he's worth it to them right now because he's, what, 33, 34?
Around there. But, you know, you look at it, Dave. I mean, he had zero time to throw the football last night, though. I mean, you look at it. I mean, he was sitting in the pocket, and, you know, in 2 seconds, he was eating grass, you know? So, I mean.
I agree. And, you know, it's clear the Giants have totally whiffed or just ignored underlying problems with their offensive line. But looking at it, you know, and I always pin my friends who are Lions fans, and I'm right now a long-suffering Bears fan, but, you know, they have been to the Super Bowl compared to the Lions. But, you know, so I always kid them that, you know, I'm a diehard Lions fan. That's just, you've been dying hard so long you're a zombie. And I do see light at the end of the tunnel, but just with what Bob Quinn is doing right now. Mm-hmm. To me, the two things that impressed me last night, one, the Lions' defense is more improved than I think anybody gave them credit for being able to do in a year.
For sure.
But I think the other thing is, last night, the way they beat him, Galladay pretty much got shut down. He wasn't open. They didn't try to throw the ball to him too often. But you had three or four receivers step up to take his foot, you know, to take that threat away, which causes pressure on New York's defense. The other thing is, they got a running back that got 86 yards.
Right.
And it was on
Amir
a couple
Abdul.
Plays.
Right.
But when you look at Stafford, only got less than 130 yards passing, but got 23 yards and a couple of critical first downs with his leg, and they got a combined rushing effort between the running backs of over 100 yards. That's something we haven't seen a long time with the Lions, is, you know, more than a quarterback zeroing in on two receivers and actually having a running game. So I think there is light on the end of the tunnel. I want to see him play Green Bay, because at the end of, you know, they got to get by Green Bay and they got to get by Minnesota. And quite honestly, those are the two teams I think they're going to have to get past to get to the playoffs. Thanks.
For sure. I agree. And yet, you know, they play Green Bay twice. And when we had our season preview, Isaac, I had predicted that the Lions would lose to Green Bay twice. However, the Green Bay Packers, if there is a formula on how to beat the Green Bay Packers, just, again, tune in to, you know, look at Sunday's film as the Atlanta Falcons were pretty much dominated that game, right? But, you know, I had made the statement that coming into that game, you know, when we had like a minute left in the show, whoever won the rushing attack was going to win last night. New York's rushing was horrible. They had 62 yards as a team on the ground. Detroit, 138. And as Dave mentioned, Ameer Abdullah, 17 carries for 86 yards. He was actually, I believe, John Gruden's grinder of the game after the game, right? And, you know, when you evaluate that, this is what can happen. You know, a 24-10 game where the Lions pretty much cruise to victory. Now, I'm not saying that if the Lions, you know, have a stout rushing attack, every game is going to be a walk in the park. But this is what can happen when you have a rushing attack that complements the arm and mobility of Matthew Stafford. And I think that's what the difference is. I mean, you know, to harp on the point that Dave made about Eli Manning, I've never been a big Eli Manning guy. And I think that he's needed supreme talent around him in order to win. You know, and to harp on that point even further, I mean, we saw at halftime the 2007 New York Giants that beat the undefeated, previously undefeated at the time, New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. They were honored at the half. Plaxico Burress, Michael Strahan, you know, those guys were in the house for that game. I mean, that was a great team with multiple pieces that Eli Manning could play with. See, this team right now, Isaac, it's horrible. First off, he has no offensive line.
No.
You got Odell Beckham Jr., who's coming off. That was his first game of the season. He looked rusty.
He was rusty.
You got an over-the-hill Brandon Marshall. It's just not a lot of talent around Eli Manning right now, and he looks like a subpar quarterback, as expected. But, you know, for me, and you compare that to Matthew Stafford, what makes these guys different is Matthew Stafford is mobile. That mobility led to the first two touchdowns for the Detroit Lions. That third down where there was absolutely nothing, where it looked like Matthew Stafford was going to take a sack for the first time in a game, he somehow, some way finds a way out of it. There's nothing downfield. Great defense by that New York Giants secondary. And he runs for a great first down and then some change and slides. That was great. That led to a touchdown on that drive. And then you look at the second touchdown where he's being pressured again. Matthew Stafford rolls out to his right, is able to avoid pressure or a sack, and throws on the run, displaying that mobility once again, finds Eric Ebron in the right side of the end zone. That is what separates Matthew Stafford from a lot of the quarterbacks out there. And for those that criticize Matthew Stafford, again, I threw out this stat on Fox over the weekend, Isaac. This is a stat that really blows my mind. And, again, goes against, you know, the stat line that he had last night. Again, he only threw for 122 yards and two touchdowns on 15-21 passing. Again, the total of 122 yards is the second fewest passing yards in a game in Stafford's career. However, Matthew Stafford ranks second all-time in NFL history in passing yards per game. Second all-time in the history of the league. He's second only to Drew Brees. Peyton Manning is third. Tom Brady sixth. Aaron Rodgers is seventh. Just let that sink in. Impressive win, but it's only week two.
I'm with you. Legit, that was the question. Are the Lions legit? Are they for real two games in? I think they're a for real 9-7 team, and it's because that before the season, I had them beating the Arizona Cardinals like they did. I had them losing to the New York Giants because I thought, honestly, that Giants defense, not that it was terrible last night, but I thought that the defensive front, the front seven for the Giants would be stronger than it is, and I had the Lions losing that one. I had the Lions as an 8-8 team before the season. They've won two games. I expected them to win one. Thus, by math, I have them as 9-7 now. That's just how the season goes. Like Dave said, we are two games in. And it's not as if the Lions have jumped out to two 49-10 victories against crazy good opponents. They beat the Giants, who are much worse than I think most of us expected, and the Arizona Cardinals, who I expected to have a little bit of a down year. Last year, they were 7-9, or 7-8-1, actually. And I think that's a sign of things to come for them. I think that's a team that's also aged in a way. I got to defend also my boy Eli Manning out. Eli Manning,
isn't that great?
In his prime,
he's overrated.
Was one of the best hot-cold quarterbacks. But when he was hot,
overrated.
Nobody was better.
Hot. Oh, stop it, Isaac.
No,
are you
I'm
kidding
not saying
me?
Nobody.
When he was hot,
but I'm saying he was
better,
in that
really?
Elite rank of quarterbacks. But when he was hot. And in 2012,
I'll tell you what.
When he won out, he had, what, Victor Cruz. What has Victor Cruz done with Eli Manning? He didn't have great receivers that second time.
No.
Never had a rushing attack.
Victor Cruz was at one time, but Victor Cruz was one of the premier quarterbacks
since.
In the league. He was one of the premier quarterbacks in the league.
He hasn't done anything since.
But Eli Manning, if you take Eli Manning, if you plug him on, the New England Patriots squad, where, again, Tom Brady at times
I'm not saying he's Tom Brady.
He would not be able to have the kind of success as a Tom, as a Peyton, as his brother. He's still living under the shadow of his brother. Isaac, I've never been a big
Eli
Manning guy.
Who is Tom Brady, though? You're comparing him to Tom Brady. I'm saying that at his peak, he was
even
a top six or seven quarterback.
Even Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers, he is never in that. Eli Manning will never be in the conversation of a Matt Ryan, of an Aaron Rodgers. Heck, even right now, of a Jameis Winston. I mean, come on, dude.
To you, he'd throw up the peace sign with two rings on each of those two fingers.
I hear you, but he had one heck of a defense backing
him. Heck of a defense, but the offense was
never
that elite. It was a good offensive line that first time, and then the second time he had, Ahmad Bradshaw, I think, as a running game support. But that's it. He never had receivers. Plexico Burress, also, you want to talk about somebody who was a little bit later on in his career, Plex was. I mean, Eli Manning never had a team where you thought, wow, this is a Super Bowl winning team.
He did.
Both times they were underdogs.
Yes, he did.
They were underdogs. The biggest underdogs both times.
Like number one in the league at the time. Did you see those guys?
They were great defenders, but the offense, you thought they were underdogs. Come on.
We agreed to disagree on that one, dude. Eli Manning, I thought, has always been just completely overrated. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527, already knocking on the door of 140 here. I want to hit this first break, and we got to get to Michigan State's press conference. Michigan State football's press conference. Mark D'Antonio took the podium, as he does every Tuesday morning, in the north end zone of Spartan Stadium. This week is a bit bittersweet, seeing as though Michigan State will play Notre Dame for the last time, at least until 2026. It's a long time from now. We'll have that and more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. To WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We dedicated that first segment to, of course, the Detroit Lions. 2-0 to start the season. Are you buying what they are selling? Are the Lions for real? We've got a few comments coming in via Facebook.com/Current Sports. Ben Grimes says the Lions dominated the Giants from start to finish. The Lions are for real. Time to start believing in this Lions team. I don't know about that one, Ben. Let's pump the brakes. Pump the brakes. Pump the brakes. That's all I'm saying. Stop sign, all right? Let it sink in. Great win. 2-0. I get it. You're leading the NFC North, but they have not played a team like the Atlanta Falcons,
and
who are favored to make a deep run in the playoffs.
Austin from Kalamazoo actually called in earlier today to the show, too. He thinks they're for real, too. 12-4.
Nah.
A record prediction. 12-4.
What? Austin, if you're listening, please call back in, because I got to hear your explanation behind that one. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. He may have had too many pops this morning. That's crazy.
Pepsis, huh? Yeah.
Too many Pepsis this morning. I don't know what in the world. My goodness. This is crazy. I'm going to have to dedicate a two-minute drill to this later on in the show. Later on this afternoon, I should say, via Facebook. Also, I'm looking at some comments here. James Johnson says the Lions played a great game. Ben has been, chiming in all hour so far. He says doubt fuels us. So we'll see. We'll see what happens as the year rolls along. And your boy Odell, he was a bit underwhelming yesterday, Isaac. What were your thoughts on Odell Beckham Jr.?
I thought it looked like he was still recovering from that injury when he went down. We weren't sure whether he would play or not this week. I thought that it was almost a desperation move of the Giants to throw him in this game. We know the statistical phenomenon that teams who start 0-2, I believe, have something like a 9%, 8% chance of making the playoffs. They viewed this in week two already as do or die. I just didn't think Odell Beckham was ready to be on that playing field just yet.
517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Michigan State football will welcome the Notre Dame Fighting Irish to Spartan Stadium under the lights this weekend, Saturday night, 8 p.m. The game will be broadcast on Fox. Again, Michigan State Athletics is encouraging anyone attending the game to make sure. If you're sitting in a certain section, I know they tried to do a whiteout against WMU, and that was an epic fail. Fans, Spartan fans out there, come on, it's really simple, okay? Just look at your section. It should tell you, or you should get an email, and if you have trouble, just you know, I don't get it. You know, if you're confused as to what section, you know, you should what color you should be wearing in your particular section, just bring two T-shirts, all right? Bring a green one, bring a white one. And then, when you walk into Spartan Stadium, you know, just when you see what that section is wearing, wear that respective color. It's not that hard because the whiteout was a struggle bus against WMU, Isaac. I mean, I was just sitting there saying, oh, my goodness, it's not that hard, all right? Whatever section you're in, make sure you know what color your section is wearing. We don't want to be, you know, we don't look like, MSU doesn't want to look like idiots on national TV come Saturday. Yeah, thank you, Isaac. So it will be a striped stadium this Saturday against Notre Dame. The last time, at least according to to future schedules right now, the last time that these two teams will meet until 2026, which is a bit odd. Going to be a fun night because, you know, we were trying to figure out, Isaac, whose number was going to join the Ring of Fame at Spartan Stadium. We were trying to figure this out. I believe after game one against Bowling Green,
yourself
and our intern, Karina Garcia, and myself, before we were shooting our stand-up, we noticed that one of the numbers was you know, covered up, and they were going to do a big reveal at some point in the year. Well, that reveal will take place this Saturday, and we know whose name it is. And I could have guessed this one, too. If you had to guess, whose is it, Isaac? If you had to guess, man. It's pretty obvious.
Off the top?
Off the top, man. Just think about it. Just don't think too hard, though. It's pretty obvious.
Who?
He's getting inducted into the...
Connor Cook?
Stop.
No,
Connor Cook. He's that dude.
Connor Cook eventually might be.
Maybe, yeah. I think he's the most decorated quarterback.
No, it would be soon for that.
Yeah. Way too soon for that, right?
Yeah.
He played baseball.
Oh, wait. Okay, that totally changes the dynamic. Is Kirk Gibson up there already? Okay.
Kirk Gibson. His name and number will be unveiled in the Ring of Fame at Spartan Stadium this Saturday. So that doesn't surprise me. I believe Kurt is going into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame pretty soon here, I believe, along with the great cast that includes also, I believe, Bob Apiza. So Kirk Gibson's name and number will be unveiled this Saturday. And, you know, again, the last time we'll see these two go at it, until at least 2026. You know, Notre Dame, you know, they have one loss right now against Georgia, a one-point loss where Brian Kelly kind of went off on a reporter after the game. And, you know, there's talk right now that Brian Kelly's seat is hot and he could be let go maybe after this year if they don't have a great season. Kelly right now is 61-32 in his eighth season in South Bend, 4-8 last season. Mark D'Antonio's record when it comes to this rivalry, Mark D'Antonio is 4-4 in his career. He's 2-1 at Spartan Stadium. Here is Mark talking about, amongst other things, but starting off talking about what this rivalry has meant to him and what are his earliest memories when it comes to this rivalry.
You know, I think, back in the day, way back in the day, you know, I grew up and there were three channels. There was ABC. I don't want to advertise for them, I guess. But three channels. And then the Notre Dame game, Notre Dame football was always on Sunday. And I'd watch it. Yeah, and I'd watch it. And I think that, so you grew up a little bit seeing Notre Dame. You see Michigan State back in the 66 game. You know, I watched that game as a young person. And so I just got involved in that respect. And then when I came here as an assistant coach, we played them in 97, 98, 99, 2000. They were always very good games. And so then when I came back, you know, I think they were fourth game on our schedule, and here we go. So they've been good games, great games, and, you know, they're always going to be packed houses, and they're always going to be nationally televised, and there's always going to be a little something that goes with that game. You know, just made it a rivalry, I guess. It's one of those things.
Mark, you mentioned your history watching Notre Dame play. Have you given any thought with the 4-on, 2-off being done in the series, for this being potentially the last game you'll ever coach in the rivalry?
I did give that a little thought. Don't count me out, though. Don't count me out. What, I mean, is it 2022? I think it's that it.
26?
26. Oh, well, yeah, you might have to count me out. That'd be 70. Okay. But, yeah, I have thought about that. This is the last one for a while. So, but, you know, just sort of in passing, you know.
When, in your history of it, is there any moments? Obviously, there are a lot of, you know, big plays, big, you know, games. Are there any one that stick out? Is it Little Giants, or is there anything that maybe
that sticks out? That'll stick out for you. A lot of things happened in that day. So that was, what was that, yesterday, 7 years yesterday? Yep. Yeah, so, yep. That one sticks out. That prompted some questions, I see.
Mark, you talking about Brian Kelly, a guy you've coached against quite a bit, followed you at Cincinnati, obviously, but he's I guess, kind of gone under a lot of heat down there, a lot of pressure down there. Just what's it like to kind of go through those things when fans are all upset and you go through a rough season? And what's
really?
It like for
you to ask me that?
Well, I don't mean like for you, but I mean for to see a guy you know well and just the challenges he's dealing with down there at Notre Dame.
I think every football coach in America in a major college deals with pressure. I don't think there's any question with that that's happening, that that happens. And, you know, so what have you done for me lately? I mean, that's the world we're living in. I don't think that that's just sports or athletics. And so, you know, it's challenging. It's challenging when you're the head of the program, when you're trying to control everything, but things are out of your control. I think being a head football coach and you think that everything is under your control, I can tell you that, you know, a lot of it's not. Blocking, tackling, leverage, all these different things, just in the game of football. So it's difficult. And you have to answer for those questions, and so it becomes difficult. But I have a lot of respect for Brian Kelly and the success that he's had and the position that he holds currently at Notre Dame, or the position I hold currently. You know, I say that because, you know, just status quo. I got a lot of respect for the head coaches across this country because it's a difficult job. But it's a fun job. You get to interact with young people. Get to do things your way. You get to set precedent. You get to make an impact on people in the community and on and off the field. And all those things are good things to do. And so, you know, you really sort of live in the dream, but sometimes there's nightmares, I guess.
Preach on, brother there, Mark D'Antonio. As Mark D'Antonio, head coach of the Michigan State football team, addressed the media as he customarily does every Tuesday morning at 11:30. Inside of Spartan Stadium's north end zone. So, you know, it's certainly bittersweet, Isaac, that, you know, this game, you know, after Saturday, this will be the last time that these two teams will play, at least until 2026. When you evaluate Notre Dame, I do believe that right now Brian Kelly is on the hot seat. You know, watching him lash out in anger after the one-point loss to Georgia 2 weeks ago just kind of puts in perspective just how much pressure he is feeling. And I thought it was I didn't see anything wrong with the question. He was just frustrated and just lashed out, and it didn't look good. And I think right now the fan base at Notre Dame is a bit fed up right now. I mean, again, he's 61-32. They went 4-8 last season. I mean, that's pretty much equivalent to, you know, Michigan State's 3-9 season last year, right? And the expectations are so high when it comes to Notre Dame football. You can't have 4-win seasons there. And, you know, really, when was the last time that Notre Dame won a big game? You know, a really meaningful game. I have to ask that question because it's been a long, long time. I mean, you have to go back to October of 2012 when Notre Dame went down to Norman to beat Oklahoma to really find a legit big-time win. That was really the last time, October of 2012. Ever since then, you know, Notre Dame has come up short time and time again in the big matchups. You know, from 2014 on, the Irish have lost every big-time matchup, really. In 2014, how about at Florida State? That was a loss. You know, 2014 at Arizona State, that was a loss. 2015 at Clemson, they got an L in that game. 2015 at Stanford, that's a loss. Fiesta Bowl versus Ohio State, that's a loss. 2016, Well, yeah, 4-8, that's a total loss, right? The entire season. So, I mean, you look at what has happened in Notre Dame, I think it's just a matter of time before Brian Kelly is let go. This would probably be his last season. And I do think, though, that when evaluating this game, though, you can't overlook Notre Dame. Because what I saw from that defense against Georgia, that was impressive.
Yeah.
If there is any strong suit to this Notre Dame squad, it's the defense. Georgia, you know, really had trouble moving the ball on the ground against the Fighting Irish. So a lot of takeaways here. I think this would be a good test for Brian Lewerke and this offense that has been impressive through 2 weeks of college football action. Brian Lewerke, it's been well documented, his mobility on the ground, mm-hmm. His ability to find receivers on the run. How about Darrell Stewart Jr., who's been a pleasant surprise? How about Felton Davis? I mean, that entire wide receiver core, to be honest with you, Tristan Jackson, they have been awesome. To see them go against a Notre Dame defense that looks for real is going to be a fun test to watch. Michigan State's defense, I'm just worried about the safeties right now.
Yeah.
I'm pleased with the play of the corners, but the safeties cannot give up big plays against the Fighting Irish. All in all, I think the table is set for a pretty entertaining game on Fox come this Saturday.
Yeah, and, you know, you've got Brian Lewerke, as you said, on one side, whose mobility makes a difference, whatnot. But Notre Dame, let's not forget, is fielding a new quarterback right now, too. And Brandon Wimbush, I believe his name is, has looked anything but stunning in the first couple of games for the Fighting Irish. He's completing barely over half of his passes, which is not a good rate for a quarterback whatsoever. So MSU's defense, good news is, I, like you, am worried about the secondary, especially the safeties. Good news is they're facing a quarterback who's still novice when it comes to attacking and threading that deep ball. But on the question of Brian Kelly, should he keep his job, should he lose it? I know it's a what have you done for me lately business, but what have you done for me, Brian Kelly, whatsoever? What big game did you win? As you mentioned, yeah, they went to the national championship. I thought they had one of the more cupcake schedules of any team to ever really make the BCS championship. When they did, they lost 42-14. That was so forgettable. In fact, it set the program back a couple years, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, from then on out, whether it's regular season, bowl game, whatever it might be, they lost every big game. And no longer is Notre Dame the Notre Dame of folklore and old. Brian Kelly, I just don't think he can keep his job after this season and the last one.
Well, I must say, and looking at how the college football landscape has just totally changed now as far as recruiting goes, and, I just don't know if Notre Dame can get back to form like it was once was back in the glory days, right? I think it's going to take a minute for Notre Dame to get back into the national championship discussion. All right, let's hit our final break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's current sports by briefly talking about NBA drama. It's pretty juicy stuff. I tell you, every other day, it's like the NBA is transformed into an episode of Real Housewives of Atlanta. That and more. Don't go anywhere. I want to go to our phone lines right now, Isaac, because we have a man who knows a thing or two when it comes to combat fighting here in America. He's a local MMA and boxing fight promoter. His name is Ron DeLeon, and I wanted to have Ron call in just to give his thoughts on what we saw. Totally rigged, if you ask me, but what we saw on Saturday between Triple G and Canelo Alvarez. You heard my thoughts. I posted them on social media, got a lot of response from it, but I want to get Ron DeLeon's thoughts. Ron, what's up, man?
Hey, Al, thanks for the time, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, go ahead. I'm just going to let you sound off. We got about 2 minutes left in the show. Your thoughts and takeaways from what happened on Saturday night.
I think it's overshadowed. It was a great fight. All in all, it was a great fight. I think people got their money's worth as far as the actual fight itself. Adelaide Byrd, the 118-110 scoring. I mean, I'm going to go into that for a whole 5 seconds. Incompetence or corruption, probably both, and leave it at that. Mm-hmm. I think it was a great fight. Anytime you look at a fight, any fight, you're looking at two things. You're looking at the landed punches, and a ring generalship. Well, Gennady Golovkin outlanded Canelo at 10 of the 12 rounds. 10 of the 12 rounds, he outscored him, outboxed him.
Right.
He was the aggressor. He's the champ defending his belt, and he's chasing, basically walking him down. The times that Canelo stuck and fought, he did well. He was a sharp punch. He's a flashier puncher. He had the crowds. Every time he raised his hands, the crowd went nuts. You know, if you're a top-level judge, as you're supposed to be, get hired for these, you know, big-time fights like that, you're supposed to have tunnel vision, lots of everything else, don't put the action in front of you. So obviously that wasn't the case in this thing. I think, you know, I had him winning at least by two or three rounds. I thought he, microcosm of the whole fight was the first round, where Canelo looked flashy, he had his moments, but still was outlanded by Triple G. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, did, like I said, it was a great fight, I said, but unfortunately that one judge put a, you know, tarnished that fight forever. That was the first thing that comes to mind. Like I said, I'll look forward to see it again, because you know what's going to happen again.
Right.
And the only thing that bothers me about that is I think this fight was late in coming. They're waiting for Canelo to get ready.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Triple G got a little older. I mean, this man's going to be, what, 37, maybe 37, 38 when the fight happens again.
Right.
Easily 37.
Right.
So a trilogy fight, anything like that, you know, after this one, you know, it's, I just think the level's going to go down a little bit on his end. And, but like I said, he's still a force. He's still bringing the action, he's bringing the heat. And Canelo was not able to sustain, you know, his game plan long enough to, I feel, win the fight.
Ron DeLeon, thank you so much for that. Appreciate it, dude. I'll elaborate on your comments on tomorrow's show. Always good hearing from you.
You as well, my friend. Thank you for the time, Al. Have a great day.
You got it. All right, same time, same place tomorrow. We'll get to the NBA drama tomorrow. Take care and be easy, people.